Barbie? Barb? Barbie? Barb?
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with us on the line now from Hope for America Ministries, Mr. David Wagner. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you for having me on. I really enjoy being on your program.
Well, it's always a pleasure having Dave. And Dave, of course, had given up a very good job with a major American corporation to go off on a crusade to try to awaken the American people as to the very real dangers that we face as a nation. And, of course, to try to get people to understand the spiritual implications of what's going on today. People don't like to hear that things are bad. People don't like to hear that we may very well lose America. We may lose our freedom. We may lose our wealth. We may lose our lives. But, of course, somebody has to be out there pointing out what's really going on. And David's doing a great job of trying to get the American people awakened and concerned about what's taking place. How are you coming with those videos? How soon are they going to be
around? Well, it's all dependent upon my equipment running correctly, Dr. Stan, but I got the update on, and the two major presentations are completed, but because there's so many things that happened since I gave them in at the end of September, both of them, I did two presentations, and I did two updates here just on the 23rd of February, and they each have, for example, the Day That Changed America Forever has like 24 slides and a couple clips, and Welcome to the New World, Welcome to World War III / New World Order, that has 63 slides. It's just in the update portion of it, let alone in the major presentation. So there, it's a major task. It takes hundreds of hours, as you know. It takes thousands of dollars to put one of these things together. So I hope to have them done. I'm going to work throughout the night providing my equipment works, and I should have at least the editing part of it done. Then I just have to put them all together by the first part of next week. I should actually be producing them if everything goes smoothly. So it's a challenge, Dr. Stan. I really covet anybody's prayers out there that is a praying person, as we're in a spiritual battle and we don't fight against flesh and blood. And there's a roaring lion. He is not only devouring us emotionally, he's literally coming against everything we have, every situation in our life. He's trying those. In fact, the Bible says he tries those that dwell on the face of the earth, and that's part of his responsibility. God tells us to stand, put on the whole armor. He's given us the armor. He's given us the way to stand. And so, again, it shouldn't shock anybody that they're going through trials. In fact, they should count them as joy as we go through these trials of life, and he makes us into more mature, stronger Christians. But we're surely living in times that you talked about in the onset of the program. We're talking about the times of Noah and the times of Lot combined, plus Jesus said there's going to be much deception. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you on this program and share truth and reality and not illusion or delusion, I mean, but to talk about reality. And that's what truth is synonymous with. So.
Well, of course, you know, the world changed for America on the 11th of September of 2001. And since that event, of course, the psyche of the American people has been altered. And now, of course, the American people are willing to go to war with anybody as long as somebody says that they may harbor terrorists. And yet, of course, the biggest financiers and harbors of terrorists anywhere in the world are the communist Russia, communist China. I mean, they've been helping certainly the Islamic terrorists. They're certainly helping Iraq. Iraq was really not a major harbor of terrorists. Iran, if you really want to get into who's funding this, it's Iran and Saudi Arabia. And yet, of course, the American people can be talked into going to war with anybody as long as the president says why they're murdering and torturing and raping. I read that today. Saddam is raping, torturing, and murdering his people. Now, there's no question that he murders people, even murders his own son-in-laws after they defected. And then he said, come home, all is forgiven. And they came home and, he tortured them to death and killed them. These were his daughter's husbands, his own son-in-laws who'd been very, very close to him. And, of course, he rules by total fear. But then so do the Chinese communist leaders as well. And yet, of course, we're doing everything we can to build up their economy and to help them maintain their ruthless tyranny over the people living in China. As long as you don't buck the government, it's fine. But you buck the government, it's off to prison and perhaps you'll be killed. So, you know, we're very, very selective in what we're doing. And, of course, what people don't really understand is the reason we're going to war with Saddam Hussein is not because he's a wicked tyrant, which he is, but then who over there that we back is not a tyrant? Do they have democracy in Saudi Arabia? Do they have democracy in Kuwait? Do they have democracy in Egypt, where 99% of the people vote for the government, or in Algeria, where the Islamists won the election, so we supported the military that wouldn't allow the people, the majority's choice, to take over the government? Basically, what we're doing, there's very, very selective in our morality. And, of course, well, the real reason behind this, it was all planned out many years ago. And I saw the most amazing program on Nightline last night with Ted Koppel, where he talked about the project for a new American century. They even interviewed William Kristol, who, of course, is one of the leaders of this group. William Kristol works for or has been given tremendous sums of money by Rupert Murdoch, who owns I don't know how many newspapers, but he certainly owns Fox Network. And, of course, when he was in college, Rupert Murdoch was known as Rupert the Red because of his communist allegiance, the fact he had a bust of Lenin on his desk, and he still has that bust of Lenin. And he's an elitist. He's, of course, pushing the war, as is Kristol. But the important thing about Kristol and the Project for a New American Century is their major goal is to station American troops in the Middle East, and America is going to remake those countries over there. And when Ted Koppel asked William Kristol about, you know, well, certainly Saddam Hussein is a bad dictator, but what about the authoritarian governments in Iran or in Saudi Arabia? And Kristol was quite forthcoming. Oh, within the next 20 years, we're going to replace them as well. We're going to replace the governments of these other sovereign nations. Yes, America is going to replace any government that doesn't go along with our desire for a world empire. And this is really what their writings say. If you read the reports of the Project for a New American Century, you will find they have a program where America will have its troops stationed throughout the world. America will dominate the world. And our troops will be, in their words, like the cavalry on the old frontier. And that's why today we have troops, according to Ron Paul, in 140 different nations, maybe only a few dozen in many countries maintaining the dictators there, and whether they be in Georgia or in Uzbekistan or other places where maintaining the communist dictators in power. But we have our troops, special forces troops, all over the world today. And, of course, we're increasing the number of troops. They're talking about stationing over 100,000 American troops permanently in Iraq. And, of course, a lot of the people in Iraq are very, very upset at the prospect of replacing one authoritarian society with another, and will say, well, we're going to be more benevolent than the other people. And I really believe we probably will. But is that really what the American people want, is to fight so our oil companies can get hold of that oil, so American can have an empire? And I don't think so. And if you doubt what I'm saying, you need to go to their website. It's newamericancentury.org, newamericancentury.org. My March newsletter will pull down there. I will simply quote from the letters they've been sent to President Clinton and President Bush. And the recurrent theme, we've got to take at Saddam Hussein, really starting back in, well, before George Bush was ever elected to the presidency, when Bill Clinton was still president, they were talking about how we have to take out Saddam Hussein. Not because he's a wicked man, but because, of course, this would be our first target as we begin to move towards the consolidation of the American empire.
Well, you covered a lot of areas there, Dr. Stan, as I was listening. There's so many things that enter. I want to bring out a point real quick about Rupert Murdoch. You mentioned him. He owns Christian Broadcasting Network. That's a Christian network in this country. Also owns various pornography magazines and publications. Again, he's the one that gives Pat Robertson's son, I think his name's Tim or whatever, the direction as far as CBN. So we've got that kind of leadership. You talked about China. I saw yesterday the China Ocean Shipping Company just got a big contract here at the L.A. port. They're really pleased with that now they can bring in the containers here at the L.A. port, one of the largest ports on the West Coast, but it's more importantly that China Ocean Shipping Company is owned by the Red Army. Again, it is about oil indirectly, but directly, it's all about controlling people. They want to control every single one of us someday, Dr. Stan. That's their purpose. Through the leadership of the global community, this occultic global community, I might add, as you look at the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill or on the side, on the doors to the CIA or on the new Information Awareness Agency or whatever it may be, they all have this pyramid. It's Illuminati's crest is what it is. The Luciferian, that's where they get their name, the Enlightened Ones, Luciferian's crest. So, no, it's not about terrorists. I could play some clips, and I do on my tapes, that it wasn't about two planes hitting the building. Those buildings came down. They were blown down. Various witnesses there said that. I didn't. Various experts said there. Various commentators said that. I don't. They do. I let them say it on the tapes. Again, the war was right at the beginning. They started talking about a war. And here, in fact, I'm looking at an article here. Bush vows to topple Saddam. He didn't say that. He didn't say that this year. He didn't say it at the end of last year. He said at the beginning of 2002. So the purpose was right away from the beginning. And yes, there are other people on the horizon, Iran, North Korea. And he also mentioned Russia and China, and he also mentioned the use of nuclear weapons if need be. So again, we're going into a whole new area we've never been in before, and it really concerns me. It should concern any American that's red-blooded and listens to, that's alive, I mean, and listens to this program, because I guarantee you our lives are getting ready to change as George Bush said they were. I'd like to play, Dr. Stan, just a very short section of the introduction to, because this says a whole lot, it really does. It's just two short clips, less than a minute. It's part of the introduction, just a very small part of the introduction of Welcome to World War III / New World Order. Let's listen to this. I put this together for this program, so let's listen and see what this has to say. Here we go.
There is a chance President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, I think, only once and hasn't been used since, and that is a new world order.
We are, as we have been saying this morning, in a state of war. The bullet from the war is over.
It will never be over. It's going to be a continuing fight around the world.
Americans.
Okay, that's just a couple of the clips there, just in a very small section of the introduction, but those are powerful.
Well, why don't we just tell them that last gentleman was the Prime Minister of Canada speaking, and he was saying the war will never be over. Now, he's saying this on probably either September 11th or September 12th. The war will never be over. That's what it's all about, a continuing war. We will always be at war. And with that, of course, we must limit the power of the American people. And the name of fighting is terrorism, but we're not talking about Islamic terrorism. There's nothing in the Homeland Security Bill, nothing in the USA Patriot Act that even mentions Islamic terrorism. It's really about redefining terrorism, and a terrorist is somebody who doesn't want to go along with the government's agenda. They've sacked the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment. They have gutted the Bill of Rights, and the Christian community is rallying behind the president after all. He says he's a Christian, and yet judge a man by what he's done. He swore to uphold the Constitution. I heard him say that today. And yet, of course, what is he doing? He is gutting the very Constitution he's sworn to uphold.
Again, the people that failed to learn from history are destined to repeat it again. You just have to go back to Nazi Germany, and you'll see that Adolf Hitler was brought in by the Protestant church leaders. They really liked him. He talked about security of the people after the burning of the Reichstag. So many things he did that are just a carbon copy of what we're seeing happen today, Dr. Stan. And it should concern everybody. The concentration camps, those are in the video. You'll see how Ashcroft has a hellish vision for a concentration camp program that's been in place for a long time. I mean, it's not something new. They did have to bring terrorism on the scene. As you listen, I'm going to play a clip here. I've got to take this out of here. But here's a clip by just a very small section. It's Henry Gonzalez. It's not the Oliver North part, but it's Henry Gonzalez talking about the fact that, yes, there is a plan in place to suspend the Constitution. Now, listen to this. In case of a terrorist attack, he said.
This is Congressman Henry Gonzalez. Yes. He was a former chairman of the House Banking and Finance Committee.
Now, this is key. We didn't have a terrorist attack when he said this, when this law was put together. We didn't have any terrorism in America. The only terrorism we've seen in America is 1993, and we told people on this program, and you've showed them over and over, that the FBI was involved with that through a memo was leaked to the New York Times and the LA Times. Then we had Oklahoma, and there's so many questions on that. I'll play a clip here if people want to hear it. It's about the fact that the bomb that went off in the building caused the damage. These are the first reports.
Now you're talking about in Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah, this was our second terrorist attack, supposedly, on this country. But again, it wasn't what we thought we saw. The third one was 9/11, but we needed this terrorist attack to be able to fulfill what Henry Gonzalez, Operation Garden Plot, here it is. Let's listen to Henry Gonzalez, what he has to say about the fact that in case of terrorism in this country, what they can do to the American people and what they're planning on doing to the American people. I guess that's the most concerning thing to me. Here we go. Let's play this.
And the plans are there, and the statutory emergency plans are there, whereby you could, in the name of stopping terrorism, apprehend, invoke the military, and arrest Americans and hold them in detention camps.
There you go. That's 1,000 words there. You know, you just listen to him, and if things aren't going through people's mind that this is a congressman that said this, that this isn't going to happen, they got to be fooling themselves.
Well,
they got to be total denial.
We actually, that is available on the Amazing Clips. We have that on the very, very short version of the Amazing Clips, the sampler. And, of course, will that be included in these new videos you're putting out?
That particular clip is it's on part of it. There's so much new stuff, Dr. Stan. I just didn't have time to put all those, but I do have a collection of 55 clips or so on amazing clips that are available. I don't say a word on it. They're all just clips from our congressmen. They all are going to affect us, or if they haven't already affected us, but most of them are going to affect us in the very near future. And I'd like to play another clip here. I mean, there's so many things that are going through my mind because I know this war is being set up so they can go to the checkless, cashless society, so they can check people at the border, so they can require that you have some personal locator device. Listen to this clip from the president of Applied Digital Solutions. Here he goes. He's talking about the fact that, yes, they have a new chip. It's called the personal locator device. Let's listen to this. Let me back it up here. I didn't get it quite on time. Here we go. Okay, let me get it, Dr. Stan, one more time. Here we go.
We're working on a product that we have called internally a PLD. PLD stands for personal locating device,
which is an implantable GPS for which our company owns a patent. The hybrid of the two of these products, being Digital Angel and Verichip, is what we call PLD. PLD should be in prototype form by the end of this year, by December of 2002, and we are already working with the Food and Drug Administration as well as legislative agencies with these products and ultimately with the PLD.
You bet they are, Dr. Stan. They're working on every possible way they can enslave every single American. They can know where they are at all times. They can control everybody that's listening. That's their purpose.
For our listeners out there, if you have any question, you know, they have not sealed our borders. In fact, I was reading an article, and I got copies of it, and we'll make it available to anybody who wants to read it, that in the last 4 or 5 months, they've allowed over 11,000 people to come in from countries that are cited as terrorist countries, and yet they've allowed them to come here to visit, and perhaps in many instances, simply to fade into the background here in the United States. These are for countries that our State Department considers to be terrorist nations. Why are we bringing in people from terrorist nations into the United States? Why don't we seal our borders? Why have we done everything to block the fact that the Saudi Arabians have been financing the Islamic terrorist movement, not only before 9/11, but right up until November of last year? And that's beautifully covered in the book A Hatred's Kingdom by Dore Gold. We'll be having him as a guest next week on our programs. Former Ambassador Gold, Ambassador in the United Nations, documents the fact that the Islamic, and from many, many sources, that Saudi Arabia financed this whole terrorist movement. And of course, remember, 15 of the 19 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia. Osama bin Laden came from Saudi Arabia. Osama bin Laden's family are still in Saudi Arabia. And there's a very real question of whether or not they've ever broken with him. But there is no question at all that the Saudis have given countless millions of dollars to this terrorist movement, supposedly. Well, it's all right to go ahead and do things elsewhere. You just leave us alone. The only trouble is they haven't left them alone. They had the bombing there at Riyadh. They had the bombing at the Khobar Towers. And what is really so fascinating about that is, of course, the American government in 1996, the government of the Sudan offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to us. And we knew that he had engineered the Black Hawk Down incident in October of 1994. We knew he was behind the bombing in Riyadh in 1995, and yet when the government of the Sudan offered to turn Osama bin Laden over to us in 1996, the Clinton administration wouldn't keep him. Now, we also have clippings in 1996 why the Clinton administration had access to FBI files that found over 50 organizations, so-called charitable organizations in the United States, that were funding the Islamic terrorist movement. What did the Clinton administration do? Why, they told the FBI to destroy the files and to stop the investigation. Why would they do something that stupid? In my newsletters, you'll find out, we have incident after incident after incident where the American government knew exactly where Osama bin Laden was, and I'm talking in the days and months leading up to 9/11, and we did nothing about it. And after 9/11, we knew where he was. In fact, we have an article out of the Washington Times where a high government official said, we have an Osama bin Laden last policy in this war with Afghanistan. After all, if we got Osama bin Laden early, how could we justify keeping the battle going? And then, of course, that article out of the out of the Newsweek magazine about how the Northern Alliance was closing in on Osama bin Laden and 1,000 of the al-Qaeda fighters, and they were just about ready to overwhelm them, when in come a fleet of black helicopters and scoop them all up. Where the black helicopters came from? Why, they were American black helicopters, Special Forces helicopters, and the commander said, oh yeah, those were helicopters we were dropping off Special Forces. In the middle of a battle, you're dropping off Special Forces. And of course, what happened to all those al-Qaeda fighters and Osama bin Laden, who was supposedly with them? Well, nobody wants to answer these questions. And we still haven't tracked down the wicked, wicked, wicked Osama bin Laden, whose family is very, very close to George Herbert Walker Bush. In fact, immediately after the 9/11 attack, the FBI guarded the bin Laden family members who were here in the United States and escorted them eventually to the airport so they could, when planes were flying again, so they could leave the country. Why would they get such special treatment? I mean, this is the family of the wicked terrorist who were told had engineered the 9/11 attack. Well, now, of course, people have forgotten that Osama bin Laden did it. Now we found the real fellow who was behind it. His name is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He was the guy who engineered the whole 9/11 approach. Well, now, I thought it was Osama bin Laden. Oh, no, no, that was last year's story. Now it was Sheikh Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. You see, and the American people have forgotten that we went to war and we killed a lot of people in Afghanistan because, of course, they wouldn't give us Osama bin Laden. But then, of course, if you go back and read what really happened, we didn't want Osama bin Laden. They offered, of course, to send him out of the country, send him to another country for trial, to give him to us if we'd given them the proof, and we wouldn't give them the proof anymore, then we'll show the American people the proof that Osama bin Laden has these nuclear weapons now or other weapons of mass destruction, other than those, of course, we'd given him initially back in the 1980s. So nothing is it as it appears to be. And now, of course, we're told Osama bin Laden wasn't the mastermind behind 9/11. It was somebody else. But sorry about that, all those people we killed. But we're really going to rectify this because we're going to kill a lot of people in Iraq. But we're going to be concerned about the citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't go to war and be concerned about the citizens because people get killed in wars, and they're planning on literally hundreds of thousands of people fleeing for their lives. I wonder how many Americans who support the war would want to go if their son was going to be drafted for the next war or the war after that or the war after that. Well, Dave, go ahead.
Well, you talked again about so many things. I got an article here in front of me. It says Iraq, Iran scientists allowed to enter top secret U.S. laboratory. Fred Upton.
No, when was that?
This was in 19. It's a real small printer. 1997 is when they had the freedom. This is Iraq and Iran. Now, all on the videos I show, and again, these are videos. You'll see how we took the top secret Russian or the top leaders of Russia, the military, through our nuclear facility there in Colorado Springs. Again, it reminded me, I think it was Hezekiah, and he brought in the Babylonians, and the prophet, I think it was Isaiah, went to him and said, you're a fool, because they're going to use that against you. Well, we let the Russians, we've helped the Chinese. These are all on the tapes. These are all in the videos. It isn't just me talking. Many of the things you've heard about the opium trade, well, that's on the tapes. You've heard about the oil fields in Caspia, well, that's on the tapes and clips. You hear about the scientists, or you hear about the various enemies that supposedly we bought with all our money, how they're really our enemies, but you see how they're allowed in all these top secret facilities. You see how there's a war on this country. Again, we talked a little bit about the concentration camps. You could talk all night just on the model state health emergency health powers act that the Centers for Disease Control right after 9/11 encouraged the states to get involved in. That's taking you from your family. That's taking your personal property away from you in case of a biological attack. And guess who makes the biological weapons? They're made here at the Centers for Disease Control down in the Georgia area. They're made in Russia. And we work with the Russians. You'll see a clip of inside that facility there in Russia where they have 52 different types of smallpox, not just one. So you can inoculate yourself against one type. They have 52 just to make sure it's something that will kill the people. Again, these things that we spent millions and billions of dollars developing these weapons of mass destruction to think we're gonna destroy them now. According to the Bible, 1/3 to 1/4 of the world people are destroyed in the end times because of plagues. What do you think a plague is? If it isn't a biological or chemical. Many of these things are in the Bible. It speaks of nuclear events being burned up by fire, and that's exactly what a nuclear weapon does. It burns people to a crisp. It just ionizes them. They turn to dust. And these things are all on the videos, Dr. Stan. There's no reason anybody listening or anybody that even cares doesn't have the ability to grab the resource, because, Dr. Stan, you've got, I don't know how many different types of resources you have, and it's important you have the different types, because there are people that education seems to get their attention, or their family, or the concentration camps, or the foreign troops on our soil, or whatever it may be. All these things are true. and I bring them out in most of the tapes or in most of the clips that I show, because for me to stand up there and just talk with, you know, just to be a talking head doesn't mean a thing. But when the congressman and when they see these facilities, people do tend to wake up for a short period of time anyway. And that's always encouraging to see people wake up and ask what they can do.
Well, that's all we can do is just try to get people aware, and they have to make the decision whether they have the courage or the integrity to become involved in this truly spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization. You know, we were the first nation in all history where we established the precedent that freedom comes not from the government, not from the ruler, but from God. Isn't it a shame we've forgotten that? And increasingly people turn to government for all their problems. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our special guest this evening is Dave Wagner, and he's got some wonderful, wonderful videos, many of which is carried through Radio Liberty, certainly the amazing clips, Day of Deception, certainly America Behind the Bob Wire, The Shocker. If you go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com, you'll get a list of them. There are two new videos that are coming out. One is the day that changed America forever, and the other is Welcome to World War III / New World Order. So and these will be available very, very shortly, as soon as David can get them put together. And if you're more interested in knowing more about them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Dave, do you want to put your telephone number out there so people can get in touch with you and get your packets?
I appreciate that. It's 1-800-959-1991. That's 1-800-959-1991. I don't have the expenses of Radio Liberty, so if they have the resources that I have, go ahead and please buy it from them. But again, I'm totally on donations from these tapes and various other things. That's what keeps the ministry alive. I'm not supported by any church or any wealthy individual but I don't have I try to keep my expenses down so I can get this information out to the American people, because I care about this country. As one time was a captain in the military during the Vietnam era. I trained combat engineers for combat for Vietnam, and I guess you would call me a patriot, but most and foremost, I'm a Christian. I love Jesus Christ. He's my friend. He's my God. He's my Lord. He's my everything. And as I mentioned last time on the program, Dr. Stanley, if we just tell the people about this, and if they don't come to that knowledge of who Jesus is, every American has the ability to look in the Bible. Don't listen to some teacher. Just read it and ask God, the Holy Spirit, to teach you. And if you ask for a piece of bread, He isn't going to give you a stone. If you're sincere about it, He'll show you who He is and what you should be doing during these times in which we live, because these are very precarious times. As I'm looking at an article here that's in the Welcome to the Third World War, it says here, plans for possible nuclear weapons against seven nations. China and Russia are the first two. Iraq, North Korea, Iran, Libya, and Syria are the other ones. And I've got articles where Syria believe they're no more than Iraq number two. And obviously North Korea is a little nervous as they're continuing to rattle sabers over there with their potential of having nuclear weapons. But again, there's going to be conflicts like John Cretchen said from Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada, really until the day we die. I believe there's going to be a lull. There's going to be a peace come on the scene for a period of time. That's why I played that clip on the personal locator device, because this man's going to have an answer for all these terrorists, for everybody to know where everybody is at all times, and that's just to implant a chip in your right hand. You don't have to worry about the forehead. That's for a high security clearance, but you'll get it in your right hand or right wrist, and that's where they'll be able to know where you are using the global positioning satellites. That's why it's called a personal locator device, and you won't be able to buy or sell unless you take it. However, if you do take it, according to the Bible, you will be separated from God for eternity.
Well, you know, one of the things that really bothers me, Dave, is that there's so many Christian leaders who are saying, look, you're nothing wrong with taking the chip. What's wrong is you've got to worship the beast. That's what it says. If you worship the beast, that's where you're going to get into trouble. But, of course, why would anybody take the chip unless they were worshiping the beast?
Well, Dr. Stan, it is worshiping him by disobeying God. Eve didn't worship the devil. She didn't start singing songs or raise her hands or whatever people think worship is. She just disobeyed God and started doing what the devil asked her to do, to eat of that tree or whatever it was that she did. It was a disobedience, and she died spiritually. And I could tell the listeners, if they take that mark, they will die spiritually forever and ever. And that's a long time, is all I know. I don't know how long eternity is, but it's longer than I can imagine. And my prayer is that nobody takes that mark. Nobody takes a chip with which you cannot buy or sell in your right hand. And yes, you're right. There are people out there telling people it's all right. We've got a doctrine called the pre-trib rapture. One of the gentlemen that actually is a proponent of that, goes around the country, meets with other pre-trib rapture teachers. He said that we have a problem in this country. It's called rapture-itis. It's a disease, he said. And it's amazing to me he continues to preach a doctrine that brings on a disease.
Well, of course, I think that he happens to be a good friend of mine. And
he's a good friend.
I love him dearly. And maybe he's right. I hope there is a pre-trib rapture, but if it doesn't occur, then I'll be a mid-trib rapture. And if it doesn't occur at mid-trib, I'll be a post-trib rapture.
The point I'd make, if I ever got a chance to talk to him, though, Dr. Stan, is you don't teach a doctrine that brings disease. You preach a doctrine that brings fruit.
Well, of course, what he really says is that he is very, very critical of the rapturitis because he feels it's neutralized the Christian church. And
Christian should
be actually involved because we don't know when the rapture is coming. And, of course, what point we stress is, look, the rapture could come 5 years after America's fallen, or 10 years after America's fallen, or 20 years after America's fallen. And, of course, we've had massive destruction here. What would you say to your kids or either grandchildren? Well, gee, I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought we'd be whisked out of here. How do you explain your failure to be involved, or is it really a failure to be involved, or is it cowardness? And my concern is that, we don't know what the future holds.
Some of these leaders, Dr. Stan, they're saying the craziest things I've ever heard, because if it neutralizes, that's the same as lukewarm. And I don't know what being spewed out of God's mouth means, but I know I don't want to be vomited out of his mouth. Because it says if you're lukewarm, or James says, God says through James, he says faith without works is dead. It's worthless.
Well, I think that our call, and his call too, is to all of us be involved in what's going on in the world today. And the fact that we may possibly be a whisked away from here before something happens certainly in no way justifies our inaction or lack of concern and compassion. How many people are really praying for the Arabs over there? 10% of the population of Saudi Arabia, of Iraq, is Christian. And even for the non-Christian Arabs there, we should certainly be praying for them. People are being forced into the military, and they shoot you if you don't get out and fight or if you retreat. That's the way that war is. War is the worst thing imaginable. And yet, of course, so many of the American people seem to think it's great. They almost imagine it like a video game. But I wonder how many of them would feel that way if their son or their grandson or their husband or brother were going to be drafted and sent off in the next war or the war after that, because this is simply the first in a series of wars, ladies and gentlemen, and you must understand that. This is the first in a series of wars establishing this new world order that, of course, President Bush's father spoke of, and, of course, that our present president embraces.
So, you're absolutely right, Dr. Stan, and that's another issue I have with these teachers. They call themselves teachers anyway, Christian ones. They put George Bush in the same category the Protestant Church in Germany did, that he's a Christian, that he's a born-again Christian. And Hitler was a Catholic, but he pronounced or he invoked Christianity, talked about the good of Christianity. They bought into the program. They didn't do anything about the people that the ashes were coming out of the smokestacks there in Germany, and that's exactly what's happening today. This man, our president, is a member of the Skull and Bones, and until he denounces the Skull and Bones, until he starts saying things out of his mouth that are Christian, people are wrong in saying he is a Christian, because he's gone on record to say that the Quran is the inspired word of God. Now, if you know anything about the word of God, it is not the inspired word of God. It's right from the pits of hell. It's inspired by Satan or Lucifer himself, and to make those kind of comments, I think our president needs to take a longer walk with Billy Graham on the beach.
Well,
I believe he needs some good teaching or something, which is very rare in this country, because we aren't teaching the true word of God. We're teaching God as a God is love, 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 and we haven't got him into the God of righteousness and truth and the various other things that are part of the Spirit.
Well, Dave, we don't know what's in George Bush's heart. All we can certainly say is that the people who surround him are certainly very evil.
And
him are part of this project for a new American century. And you can go back and see who was part of this movement in 1997. Go to their website, www.newamericancentury.org. You get it to the library. Of course, it will be included in our newsletter, and the exact references will be there. And when you, of course, look in the look up, you'll find there's Dick Cheney. Now, this is 1997. George Bush hasn't even considered running for the presidency in 1997. And there's Donald Rumsfeld. There's Paul Wolfowitz. There's our present ambassador to Afghanistan. You'll find people in the highest positions of our Defense Department and our State Department, all part of this little clique, 26 people or 25 people, who in 1973 assigned the statement of principle which encompasses this plan that is being enacted today for a new American empire. And so, I mean, is it just coincidence that the people who signed that are that today the people who surround and, I believe, control the President of the United States? Well, let's go to Mike, and he's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I just wondered if I could get the source of that quote, that the Quran is the Word of God.
I've got it. It'll be on the tape, False Teachers, Unsound Doctrines, Doctors of Demons. I don't have it right in front of me now.
It's one of the videos.
Yes.
What's the title of the video again?
Well, it's not out yet. It'll be out this summer.
All right.
It's called False Teachers, Unsound Doctrines, and Doctrines of Demons.
All right. Then you're working on that one, but you haven't got that one done. Well, first of all, get the two done you're working on.
Yeah, that's my objective. And again, I didn't mean to tell you, Dr. Stan, that I'm judging whether George is a Christian or not. It says, judge not according to outward appearance, but judge according to righteousness. And that's what comes out of the mouth, because out of the mouth proceeds the things of the heart. So again, I'm not judging him, but I am aware of wolves in sheep's clothing. I do keep my eyes open, and God said there will be many of those that dress up, they look just like, they carry their Bibles, they say the right things, and beware of those, because we're supposed to be as wise as serpents, yet as gentle as doves. And,
remember that Bill Clinton always went to church and carried a Bible. And,
absolutely.
And, of course, he went and addressed a whole flock of ministers after the Monica Lewinsky affair and said how repentant he was. But, of course, there was nothing in his subsequent appearance of what he did that showed repentance. He went out to destroy anybody and everybody who was involved in the effort for the impeachment. And he did destroy a lot of them and their careers. But, you see, you say one thing and you do another. And certainly, as we look at Bill Clinton, he certainly was a hypocrite. So you judge people by what they do, not by whether they go to church and carry a Bible, as Bill Clinton did and professed to be a Christian. Even led the prayer sessions, at the prayer breakfast in Washington, D.C. Anything else, Mike?
Well, Bill Clinton fooled 38% of the Christian evangelical vote into voting for him.
Or maybe they were more concerned about money than principle.
Well, they thought he was a Christian.
All right, but the other thing is, of course, is we know very well that the president did invite the Muslims to the National Cathedral to pray. He invited them into the White House to pray with him. So there is some concern about that. Anyway, anything else you want to say, Mark?
Well, Bill Hybels of Willow Creek Church was his mentor, his spiritual source.
Right.
Whatever you want to call it. One question. Do you think Osama bin Laden actually exists?
Oh yes, I think he exists. Right. I don't think he's a wag the dog character. I think there really is an Osama bin Laden, but I think that he has been created by the media. And of course, isn't it fascinating? We just can't find the wicked Osama bin Laden.
That's why I wonder if he exists.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Mike.
Okay.
Well, let's go to John calling from Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John.
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Good to have you with us. Question or comment? I'm so glad we got on the air up there. Apparently, there was some trouble with the lines, but fortunately, Mr. Reed got things squared away so we could share this program with you.
Yes, we joined you late, but it's a good signal right now. I just wanted to comment very briefly that I almost fell out of my chair yesterday because I've heard you talk for months and months about PNAC, that the acronym being the Project for a New American Century, and how insidious and evil they were. None other than Ted Koppel had him on Nightline last night. That was a topic.
That was the greatest program I've seen in a long time, and I congratulate Ted Koppel. He had William Crystal there, who was one of the leaders of this whole movement, and he was talking about destroying the Saudi government and the Iranian government. My goodness, that couldn't be very good for American foreign relations. How would you like to be a Saudi and see that program and know that they're next on the line, next on the list?
Oh, my goodness. You know, Dr. Stan, he used the C word, and I have never heard Ted Koppel use the word conspiracy.
Right.
It reminds you of the old Gary Allen book, None Dare It Call It Conspiracy.
Well, of course, he said, well, it really isn't a conspiracy because it's right out there in the open. But isn't it amazing that up until just a month or two ago, nobody had ever heard of the Project for a New American Century?
Indeed it is. I would certainly encourage the listeners. I think Nightline has about a 24-hour latency. You can maybe even hear it on the web right now. And if not, it might even be worth getting that tape before it disappears.
Well, we actually have taped it, but you can actually get call your local station, ABC, and ask them how to get it for. You can either get the text for about $12, or you can get the video for about $25. It's really worthwhile putting the money out to get that video from ABC. It will change your outlook, and also it will help you to convince others there really is an organization there that controls the president.
That was a powerful message. I'll let you go.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
Very much, John. Okay, let's go to Nathan calling. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Good evening, gentlemen. Mr. Wagner, it's good to talk to you. I've heard you before. I don't believe I ever called in when you were on the air, though. Let me just give this opinion of mine personally, and I'll see how you gentlemen respond to it. In fact, I might even take my answer off the air. But as I read the Bible, what you would term the Old Testament, I come across a lot of prophecies that seem to suggest basically what you would term the New World Order, they seem to specifically devolve around the armies of the world surrounding Jerusalem. Maybe not Israel so much in particular as Jerusalem, the city itself. And I would presume from that, to my mind, that within Jerusalem itself there would be a righteous remnant of both Jews and Gentiles who would basically be free of the New World Order, or whatever you want to call it, that it would have total dominion, but in the city of Jerusalem there would be some measure of liberty or some measure of continuing freedom that every nation on earth would be unable to stamp out, and that ultimately the Messianic coming would enter in a sense through that the angels would come down and defend that, and that the microchip and that these other forms of technology will be implemented everywhere else, but that the main thrust will be to capture control of that Temple Mount and to build not the Temple of Jerusalem, nor will it be to uphold the mosque there, but an entirely new structure that would be essentially a monument to the Illuminati.
Well,
that sounds kind of far out, and I'll let you comment on it.
All right, fine.
I admit it sounds far out.
All right, fine. Let's get David Wagner's a take on what Nathan is saying.
Doesn't sound too far out to me, Nathan. It literally, I believe there's going to be a New Age temple built there where the Jews will be able to worship the Buddhists, the Muslims, the Christians. Everybody will be able to come together at that temple. I believe very soon the Jews are getting ready to receive their Messiah. He will come on the scene very soon as the man that's going to save them. Jesus said, I came in my Father's name, and me you didn't receive. There's going to be one coming in his own name, and him you will receive. They're going to be blindsided for a period of time. He's probably going to rule out of the Supreme Court building there in Jerusalem. as David Ben-Gurion said, someday the whole world will come here to be judged, and the Supreme Court is built there. They have the pyramid with the eye on top of that Supreme Court building. You, as you sit in the library, you can look out a big window and you can see it. Again, it's on these tapes. So, yeah, that's the focal point over there in the Middle East, and religion will be play a big part in it, and that's exactly what it is, religions. See, I really don't believe in any religion except true religion where we minister to the orphans, the widow, the poor, the oppressed. Most religions, all they're doing is trying to please God by their various rituals that they do, by the various things they do. And we can't please God. The only way you can please God is by faith, by trust and dependence upon what he already did for us on that cross on Calvary 2,000 years ago. That's what makes him happy. That's what pleases him, as we trust him as a father, as a little child trusts his father for every bit of every part of our life. And so again, yes, you're right. I don't think it's far out. I do think there will be a temple rebuild, and I believe it's going to be a multi Unitarian type temple where everybody will worship.
I think that it's really amazing. I've seen pictures. Somebody was over in Israel, and they took the picture of the pyramid with the eye on it that you can see out of the window. And whether it's the Supreme Court or Knesset, you probably know where it is better than I. But it's certainly one of the buildings there in Jerusalem itself. And here is the symbol of the Illuminati. Now, I believe that the Jewish people are waiting for their Messiah. They don't believe that he's already come. And so, since they really, by the very essence, and I'm talking about the traditional Jews, now there are a lot of Jews who become a Messianic Jews. In other words, they believe that Jesus was the Messiah and he's coming again. The Jews wait for the Messiah. We wait for the return of the Messiah. But I fear that the Orthodox Jews are going to find a means of building that temple. I think God is going one way or another to destroy the Mosque of Omar. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't want to be any part of it. That's God's job. But when that happens, when the Mosque of Omar is destroyed and the new temple is built, then the Antichrist will not be far behind. We're out of time, Dave. Next time we got to go 2 hours because we just touched so much on what's going on. Our guest is Dave Wagner of Hope for America. Give your telephone number just one more time.
Okay, it's 1-800-959-1991. Again, 1-800-959-1991. Just leave your name, address, city, state, and zip, and I'll get a resource packet off to you right away.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you just sort of hang on here for a minute or two, because I suddenly realized we don't have to go to a commercial break here because this is a non-commercial station. So we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program with our special guest tonight, Dave Wagner. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I talked to a gentleman today who doesn't believe, of course, in Christianity at all. And he told me that, of course, that the real thing is that George Bush is, being a Christian, believes that we've got to bring the Christ back to earth by having a great war in the Middle East, and this is what it's really all about, that we are going to provoke the Battle of Armageddon, believing that that's going to bring back the Christ. Well, I will tell you, we will not play any part at all in what happens. God is going to determine what happens, and this long spiritual battle, this whole thing has been laid out since the beginning of time. I really believe certainly we should do our best, we should be involved, but as far as bringing Christ back, we're not going to bring Christ back. He's going to come when the time has come, but before that, of course, I think there are going to be some terrible, terrible times that lie ahead. And that's why I think it's so important that people have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, because I think that's all that's going to sustain them. Would you agree or disagree with that, Dave?
Dr. Stan, it's real important when you say the Christ, and the listeners understand this. Benjamin Krim talks about the Christ, and the Lord Maitreya talks about the Christ, and there's many Christs, there's many Jesuses, but there's only one that was God come in the flesh. So again, be careful as these, I'm talking to listeners now, as they talk about this Christ coming. That's just a New Age term. They're just talking about these other gods other than the living God. And yes, there is a plan in place. The scribes wrote about it. They wrote very clearly what was going to happen. I don't know that it's all God's will, because it's God's will that none perish, yet straight is the gate, narrow is the path, and few are going to enter, because we have a choice. Unfortunately, man has developed these weapons of mass destruction. As you look at the book of Revelations, as you look at the plagues and the pestilence and the wars and rumors of wars and the and the fire and all these things that are coming from heaven, they're very possibly made by man himself. And God says, I have to come back so there would be flesh dwell on the face of the earth. He has to put an end to this carnage that's going to be taking place, I believe, in the years ahead, just a few years ahead.
Nice.
I believe everything's being set up right now, Dr. Stan, over there in the Middle East right now for the act number one, so to speak, before the end comes. And this isn't the Armageddon. I'm not talking about the war of Armageddon that the Bible speaks of. I'm talking about the war that precludes the bringing on of the man of peace. And he says, by peace, this man in Daniel says he will destroy many. And so they're going to have peace and security, as Jesus said. But he says, then watch out, because sudden destruction comes. So we're going to have a short-lived peace, and that peace is going to be brought in by the technology we have today, by tracking everybody, by making sure where everybody is at all times. And please don't get involved with taking that chip that's just around the corner that everybody's going to be required to take.
But I really think we're moving towards World War III. I think that the coming war with Iraq will simply be a means of driving many countries into opposition to the United States, and will unite the world, at least the Muslim world, against us. Heaven help the America, because with 1.2 billion Muslims aligned against us, and of course dissension at home, and a bankrupt and immoral society, I believe destruction will not be too far ahead. And our job is to try to get people to understand, what's going on, pray for revival, because that, of course, is the only thing that's going to change the direction of things. Will it come about? I don't know. All I know is that I'm called to do what I do. I know that David Wagner, our guest this evening, is called to do what he does, and he works sometimes to 20 hours a day there putting together these videos for you, and we'll have many of them. You can check our website at radioliberty.com and get information on them. Call Dave, but thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, real quick, that revival can start in every listener. It has to start within our own hearts. We're the ones that can ask God what we should do during this time, and start loving God with all our heart and loving each other and doing what God's called us to do. So, yes, it can take a place even today in our own hearts, and that's who you're going to be responsible for, and then pray for others, or even to pray for your enemies. So,
amen to that.
Again, thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank you for what you do, and Barbara and the whole family up there, Radio Liberty, to just keep the work up. I hope the government lets you keep your station open for a longer period of time, but with Patriot Act 2, and again, that's on these new videos coming out, Patriot Act 2, everything that we've talked about is on these videos. They're one of them's a four-hour video, so it covers many subjects. So again, keep up the good work. God bless you and keep you and your listeners the same. May they just be found doing the will of the Father when he comes back, or when they're called home, whichever it may be.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Dave Wagner, and I hope you enjoyed the program. David's really one of my favorite guests, and he's totally committed to this battle. Are you committed to the battle? I will tell you, the people on the other side are committed. And I hear people saying, well, I really don't believe the Bible and what it says. Well, I will tell you, the Luciferians do. In fact, in my latest newsletter, I'll be giving you several quotations from the Luciferians. They know exactly what's happening now. They think, however, that they are going to come out victorious. At least that is what they have to believe, because that's what motivates them. And they believe in this eternal battle between God and Satan, between good and evil, between Christ and the Antichrist, that they are on the winning side. How many people here really are willing to commit themselves to be on one side or the other? Because believe me, in this battle that's coming down, there is no position for neutrality, and as Dottie assured us in his classic, The Inferno, the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who at a time of moral crisis try to maintain a position of neutrality. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed the program this evening. I hope many of you will consider seriously joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter and you haven't had one before, our February newsletter is excellent, and I think our March newsletter, which I'm just beginning to work on, will really be pretty dramatic. And of course, we will go into the background of the project for a new American century that John from Post Falls, Idaho, was talking about this evening. It was discussed on Ted Koppel's show last night. I'm sorry you did not all see it. It was one of the finest beats of pieces of investigative journalism I've seen, and he laid it all out. He asked the right questions. He didn't play softball like Dan Rather or most of the others. And so please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WARD, and pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. And please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow night, when we'll be back with you once again, God willing, and as those telephone lines stay up, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. You know, there are an awful lot of stories out there that will really break your heart, and probably not two or three weeks goes by, but somebody calls me to tell me about how they have lost their children to the child abuse industry. And, of course, for any minor infraction, they can take your children away from you. And it doesn't really make sense. Why would they want to take your children away from a loving family and put them into a foster home many times where they really are not taken good care of, and many times they're sexually molested, and there are all sorts of problems in foster care. Some foster parents are wonderful people, but some of them really are not. But of course, the people who love their children the most are the parents or the families. And so, you know, the problem that we face is there is a financial incentive. You get in this world what you want and what you pay for. And so if the government wants people to get married, why they give them a tax break to get married? The government doesn't want people to get married, why it's more expensive to get married, and it'll cost you more in taxes. If you want people to work hard, why you reward them financially for working hard. If you don't want them to work, you want them to be on welfare, you pay them well for being on welfare. and people be on welfare. You get what you subsidize. Well, this is true with the child abuse industry, because, of course, if you can get the child out of that home, you are part, your organization is going to get $25,000 from the federal government. Isn't that great? And you can spend it on all sorts of goodies and raises. And then, of course, you know, if you got a little corruption there, well, you can keep part of the money yourself. And who'll ever know? Because how many people have ever audited the books on the local child abuse industry? And so the federal government has a program to break up homes, to destroy parents. And, of course, maybe this is unintended consequences of well-meaning bureaucrats back in Washington, D.C., and legislators who said, gee, we've got to protect the children out there, you know, from abusive parents. And there are rare instances where we do have abusive parents. But that's not business of the federal government. That is certainly not something they should be involved in. That should be taken care of at the local level. But when you begin to subsidize local bureaucrats for taking away children, are we surprised that so many children are taken away in the name of course, we're so concerned about the child until they get sexually molested or something like that. And then, of course, everybody just tries to hush things up. A government, by its very nature, is corruption. We see this in San Francisco, where they have indicted the chief of police, and I don't know how many of the executive officers or the senior officers there, for trying to cover up the malfeasance of three rookie policemen, one of whom was the son of a high-ranking police officer. And this is how our police works very often. Not always. I mean, some place we have, and most police officers are good people trying to do a job. But, you know, within this system, it's sort of an us against them. And so there is a thin blue line, and they stand behind one another. There's a code of silence. And if somebody, a police officer, commits a crime or throws a gun down when there was none there, or makes up artificial or phony reports to convict somebody because they may be guilty, it's like certainly O.J. Simpson. If you ever study the O.J. Simpson trial, there's no question that O.J. was framed by the police. Now, they may very well have framed a guilty man, but there is no question he was framed. And those words, well, if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit, by Johnny Cochran, certainly will go down in history, because the gloves didn't fit, and those weren't O.J.'s gloves. And for whatever reason, the prosecution asked him to put on the gloves, and it should be very obvious that they did not fit him. Why they would do that, I have no idea, other than the trial of O.J. Simpson and the story. You've never heard the true story. We have a wonderful four-tape set on O.J. Simpson, and nobody wants to hear it now, but you really need to hear it to get all sides to know that he was framed, and they may very well have framed a guilty man. Well, tonight we have with us Bob Fletcher and a woman from, whereabouts do you live, Bob?
Valentine, Nebraska.
Valentine, Nebraska, and Bob is certainly one of our supporters, and he'd call me about a tragic case that he knows. Why don't you give us the background on the case, Bob?
Well, this Carla, when she was working at a feedlot in Winter, South Dakota, and we're a little bit south of, you know, we're not too far from South Dakota here. Anyway, she was working in a feedlot in Winter, South Dakota, and they fired her because she got pregnant, and that, you know, she couldn't really do the job, and they didn't want to, you know, give her an office job. I think they just didn't have a place to put her. And so she sued them, and she won a case against them, which I disagree with. I don't think they should have had to pay her. I think they should have the right to hire and fire, but you don't have that right in this country anymore. Anyway, it's a small town, and she seemed to start having problems just about everything then. And she had called this friend of hers over in Hot Springs, South Dakota, and Jessica was 8 years old then.
Now, that was her daughter?
Her daughter Jessica,
right,
yeah,
okay.
Very nice.
Jessica was okay, fine.
Yeah, her daughter Jessica, and she'd made arrangements. She couldn't get a hold of this guy. His name was Lonnie Dunn, and he ran a feedlot. She couldn't get a hold of him, but she talked to his daughter. I think this daughter, I'm not sure, but I think the daughter's about 39 or something like that. And she talked to her, and she said, well, I need somebody to watch Jessica for a day or so, because she's going to change school. She's going to a Christian school in Winter there, and then you'll find out, you know, you see they made a big deal out of that. But she, could you watch Jessica for a day or so for me? She said, yes, bring her. You can bring her over.
Why did Carla want her daughter watch for a day or so?
Because Jessica got in trouble in this little Christian school, and they had suspended her, and she had a bunch of stuff to take care of in Rapid City, and she was, I think, probably arguing, or, you know, her and the kid were arguing. I wasn't there. I was in hospital at the time. I had an eye injury, but she said, you know, I have a go to the doctor and all this other stuff and the whole day, and I'll have to leave Jessica sitting in the car. And so then she was just going to leave Jessica there with this Lonnie Dunn, who I never liked anyway or didn't trust. And the daughter simply forgot to tell her dad that Carla was bringing Jessica. And Carla just drove up there and dropped her off and took off where this guy works. He runs his feedlot in Hot Springs. Well, she just drove up there and dropped the little girl off and took off.
That wasn't very smart on her part, was it?
No. No, I really, in retrospect, it was dumb. It really was. But, you know, they made such a big deal out of this. This Lonnie Dunn, he for some reason called the cops, which he can't explain that. You know, I ask him why. Well, it's the law. It's the only answer I ever got. Well, she just went about her business. You know, she just went to Rapid City and was doing whatever she was going to do. And the state patrol stopped her. And they told her. And she was kind of flabbergasted. Well, I'll just go back and get her, you know, if he wants to be like that about the whole thing. They were real good friends from church. They went to the same church, and she knew him quite a while. And I guess she thought she could trust him. Well, then it comes to pass and that she had been in, and that was another big mistake she made. She went in and there in winter this day before this and applied for economic assistance, which is what I call welfare, and she should have never did that. And this welfare worker had filed a report against her with the Child Protective Services, saying that she yelled at Jessica when they were in there, which anybody that knows Carla has a hard time buying that. And they had, at this time that Carla was off over here dropping her off in Hot Springs, it's about 200 miles, they were looking for Carla at that time. They were over at her house trying to round her up. Because they had a report from this welfare worker that said that she questioned Jessica, evidently with Carla standing there, which just kind of baffles me. This is her report, though, that she questioned Jessica and that things Jessica said led her to believe that there was some possible type of abuse at some time in the past that could be going on presently. If you can believe that.
Well, of course, the thing is that she never should have gone into the welfare office, because once she does, she has sort of sold her soul to the devil, as it were.
I agree with you 100%. But at that time, Carla was a good little socialist that thought the government owed her a living and that she could count on the government, and you know what I mean. And that's the way that schools teach you to be. You have everything right now in a society where the government is going to protect these children from these evil parents, and it's going to take, you got to have the government to protect these poor defenseless women from these evil husbands that are going to beat on them every day. It's always government is good, family is bad. You can trust the government, but you can't trust your family.
Well, of course, the thing is that the husband should not be abusive. There's no excuse for it. But then the wife should have a right to be able to get away and from that husband, or get a restraining order. And, of course, he has a financial obligation to look after by our legal system if he truly is abusive. But there are plenty of laws to do that without this idea of taking the children away. And then, of course, there's a tremendous pot of gold for the local abuse agency.
Correct. Well, that federal thing is, they have the federal law. If they remove the child, and only if they remove the child from the home, they have a $25,000 charge account.
Right.
And they can charge $25,000 worth of services to that charge account.
And of course, I suppose up there where the economy is sort of bad, I bet that $25,000 looks pretty good to the social workers, doesn't it?
I'm sure it does. But it seems to me like there's a tie-in the whole thing. if you knew Winter, it's a little small community, and this Winter Circle feedlot is, if you have any prestige, of course, how would you prove this? But she, it seems to me like somebody called and said, you know, could you make things a little hard on her? I wasn't there, or actually I was nowhere near there. I would never, A, allowed her to go over there to begin with, because I'm smart enough to stay away from the government.
And of course, she never should have brought a lawsuit, but she thought she could play the system, didn't she?
Well, she
later off, they didn't have a position for her. Why should you have to hire somebody and keep them on when they can't do the job?
Well, because that's the way it is in a socialist nation.
Right.
Right. That's the way it is in Germany.
Right.
That's the way it is in France. And that's almost the way it is in Great Britain. Yeah, and I agree with you there. I agree, and I was against that too, but she did win, and she stuck them for $10,000-some. Well,
yeah,
it just seems to me like somebody had to have made a phone call and said, because all of a sudden she could not live in Winter, South Dakota. And for this, if you've seen this report that this so-called economic assistance worker, I call them welfare workers, they had nothing, and that's why they wouldn't just let her take the little girl. When she just went back, get Jessica. Well, but then they caught it coming across the teletype in Winter. It's 200 miles across there, mind you. And they already, get this, they recognized her name. Really. She's never had any contact with the cops, ever. She never even gets a speeding ticket or nothing. But they recognized her name in the sheriff's department. See, because they just asked them to locate the car. And by that time, by the time it came across the teletype in Winter, they'd already found her. She was just a few miles from there.
Now, basically, she was there with her daughter?
No, she left her daughter with Lonnie Dunn.
Right, she left her daughter with Lonnie, okay.
Yeah, and then, see, the cop said, well, hey, let's just find her and tell her to come get her daughter. This cop evidently didn't, you know, think too much of this deal. He just said, well, let's just find her and tell her to come get the little girl. So they found her. She was just driving to Rapid City. They found her right away. But that's what amazes me. She's already on her way back there to get the little girl, and the cops in Winter call social services. Social services calls Hot Springs, say don't let her have her because we're investigating her for child abuse. Now look at the case they had against her. Just baffles you. You know, because somebody had talked to Jessica, with Carla standing there no less, and Jessica had said something that led her to believe that there could possibly have been something in the past that might be continuing presently. What an absurd statement. Well, so then they wouldn't let her have Jessica, and she accepted that. Then me, you know, I'd have just took the little girl and left and made them stop me myself. So they said, well, look, they told her that, look, all you got to do is get this public defender, which is more or less a public pretender if you think about it much, and, you know, you'll have her back in a week, 10 days. Well, that's the first, and in South Dakota, they have to have this 48-hour hearing. And the law is real clear. They got to go to all this trouble to notify her. Well, they didn't notify her, but she should have been there anyway. Well, she thought that since they didn't notify her, that she'd automatically win. And, you know, it doesn't take much to figure out that she didn't know much about the court system. Because, see, no matter what the rules don't apply to the court system. They only apply to you. And so then...
They had the hearing then, the custody hearing.
Without her.
Oh, and she wasn't notified about it.
She never got any notice, no.
All right. I suppose her public defender was there, and they usually work right along with the court. They've got a special deal. After all, they're getting paid by the government, so they're going to go along with the government. And the public defenders, unfortunately, many times do not represent their clients. And that, of course, is unconscionable. But then why should we expect morality in our judicial system when our nation has rejected God?
Well, right, and especially attorneys. I mean, attorneys don't just reject God. I think a more accurate description would be they scoff at God.
Well, a lot of them do. We got some good attorneys, thank goodness, but I wish we had a lot more. But, you know, it's sort of like in medicine. Why, you know, you don't have to believe in God. you're above the law in many respects. And the same is true with attorneys. Some of them are wonderful people, but an awful lot of them really don't have a religious foundation. And so they become the law unto themselves. That's why they'll do such dishonest and dastardly things.
Well, and they're a member of the bar, which has control of them. And if they lose that exclusive membership, they don't have a livelihood, especially a plush livelihood where they do nothing except bill people for making out the bill they're sending them.
Well, go ahead. I'm sure if we have any lawyers out there, they will be bristling. If we have good lawyers or honest lawyers, they'll be bristling at that. But
I had a pretty good friend that was a lawyer, and he was mad at me most of the time for telling lawyer jokes.
Some of the best lawyer jokes I ever heard were told by lawyers.
Right. Well, this lawyer only sued doctors, Dr. Stan, for malpractice, but he's pretty good. Anyway, what happened to Carla then was, and by the way, the court refused her a court-appointed attorney, which I wasn't up there, mind you. But although the law is extremely clear in South Dakota, it says they have to give her an attorney. They refused it. Well, so then.
But you see, the child abuse courts are entirely different than the regular courts. I mean, they've got a whole system with their judges, and this is why a lot of attorneys won't even take one of these cases, because they realize that there's really not what they can do about the system. Many attorneys realize how corrupt this whole child abuse system is, and that's completely out of the regular courts. This doesn't go to the regular courts.
It is more corrupt, I agree, but the regular court itself is corrupt beyond measure. You have judges who are going to interpret a plainly written sentence, like in the Constitution. Any halfwit can read it, but yet we have judges that are going to interpret what is plainly written, and somehow they get a meaning which is totally different than what it obviously means.
Well, that's what's just judicial activism. That's what the Supreme Court did to the First Amendment and the 14th Amendment. And we got real problems, in fact, up in the state of Washington here within the last 2 weeks. One of the Supreme Court justices, a woman, was involved in an automotive accident. She ran into a truck. She took off and didn't stop because she was drunk. And when they finally picked her up, hours later, she was still drunk. And her remark was, well, what I did was unconscionable, but she's still on the Supreme Court. Now, somebody like that does not deserve to be a judge, you know.
That's not even an isolated case, really. There's a case in Iowa or Illinois last year of a Supreme Court judge buying purses and stuffing them full of all kinds of stuff. And they at one point arrested her for shoplifting, but she was released and the charges were eventually dismissed.
Right.
She had a purse so full that you couldn't hardly lug it. But I don't think, you know, the courts are extremely corrupt.
But they're
a reflection. Branch of government.
But Bob, they're a reflection of society.
We get
the sort of law we deserve, and the church refuses to speak out on it. Ministers certainly wouldn't want to take a stand on anything that might be controversial.
Most
they would offend somebody.
I agree. Most ministers, and in the church we go to, I think that most people there consider me a radical. My grandfather, who fought the government over property rights, but my grandfather was considered a radical clear back in the 60s because he kept up on the rest of the world. You know, down here in ranch country, they really didn't care what was going on in New York City, but he did. And he read the New York Times and stuff like that. And he was willing to fight for his rights.
Okay, well, let's get back to Carla. And basically now they've taken her daughter away from her. She's in the court system. She didn't show up because they didn't tell her she was supposed to show up. But didn't she have an obligation to try to find out when the case was on her own? Why would she expect they were going to tell her? Why didn't she try to find out when it was?
That's a good question.
I mean, you know, the thing is, it's all very easy to blame the system, but we are involved in the system, and she has some responsibility. It doesn't sound like she was very interested in finding out when the case was going to be, does it?
No, she just messed up. She went up there and she thought, she got it in her head that as long as they didn't notify her, then she would automatically win. And see, that's just not the case.
Well, that's
right?
The most absurd thing I ever heard.
No, well, not necessarily. If I was given a speeding ticket and they had court on the 10th, but they didn't notify me, there's no way they could hold me liable for a speeding ticket.
Of course they could. I mean, it's up to you to find out when that trial is going to be so you can be there.
No, you have to have notice. That's the law. And far as that goes, that is also the law in South Dakota. It's extremely clear.
Okay.
They have to notify their parents. They have to. But they didn't. And so she thought she would just win. She went in the next day and said, hey, you got to give me the little girl back because you didn't notify me. And they just laughed at her. Because, see, the law doesn't apply to them. But the South Dakota law is extremely clear.
No, but it doesn't apply to them. They have a different set of circumstances.
And so... So then, see, finally, after about 2 months, they kept telling her they told her then it would be 6 weeks. So she fell for that, and after about 2 months, she got all over this public pretender, and this gal just said, look, I don't get paid to give you this advice, I don't get paid to give you that advice, I'm only going to go into court with you on this day, and if you don't like that, that's too bad. And so... finally, after about 2 months, they went into court for this hearing. And in the hearing, they never got around to really much about Jessica. Instead, the judge, and in South Dakota, you have to realize that every one of these laws in South Dakota for juveniles also says that the court, on its own motion, in other words, the judge can... See, in like other states, you couldn't do that. But in South Dakota, the judge doesn't have to wait for one attorney or the other attorney to make a motion. The judge can just do it. And so the judge wants to have her committed.
Who wants to have who committed?
Carla.
Why does she want to have Carla committed?
Because she was pregnant, and they were concerned for the baby.
No, she's pregnant again.
She was then. She's not now.
All right. So this, okay.
See, it goes from Jessica... to the baby, this quantum leap that nobody can understand. But in South Dakota, there's a law that says that if social services has one of your kids for any reason, they can take all the rest for no reason at any time with no notice. It's absurd. There's also a law in South Dakota that says if you are giving your child spiritual counseling, that the court can order you to stop that and take your kid to see a psychiatrist. So they really will be a wacko. South Dakota is just unbelievable.
Well, that's because the people have allowed the wicked people to take over the courts.
Wicked? I don't know if that would be the appropriate word for
Well, I mean, anybody would say that we will take your child away from you because you're giving them spiritual counseling. We're told that we should raise up our children in the ways of the Lord. And if somebody says that that's wrong... then they're wicked. I mean, they have a right to their belief, but they don't have a right to take a child away from a parent who's trying to do what's right for them.
Yeah, it's called the spiritual counseling law in South Dakota.
Okay, fine. Well, they've allowed the wicked people to take over the government, and you have an anti-Christian government there.
Oh, yeah, and see, it later on, which Carla finally got wise then, by this time I was out of the hospital and everything, I told her she'd lost her mind if she even... talk to that public pretender, and to get an attorney, hire one and pay. Well, at this point, Carla fired that attorney. She came to her senses, and she fired her.
In other words, public defender.
Yeah, she fired her.
Well, why didn't she hire an attorney on her own? She had the $10,000, didn't she?
Well, yeah, she did, but...
She wants somebody else to take care of this. She's not going to go out and spend this money that she got away from these folks, and I think she cheated it out of them, and she won't spend that money to get her daughter back?
Yeah, well, actually, now she's spent about twice that much by now.
Okay.
But at that time, she just thought that she could get something from the government.
Get something for nothing. Well, she got... It was worth just what it cost.
Yeah, it's been a nightmare, and it's ongoing right now. It's in the Supreme Court right now.
It's in the Supreme Court now.
Right.
It's in the in the South Dakota Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm, it is. She's got a interim appeal into the South Dakota Supreme Court. They allow They call it an intermediate appeal in South Dakota. Most people call it an interlocutory appeal in South Dakota. But they allow that for the adjudication. And see that, one thing about it, I've always maintained throughout my life that you're better off with no attorney than a poor attorney. And she's just spent money hand over fist on attorneys that would do nothing but just cooperate with the government. And why do you need that? You can do that without an attorney. You can walk in there and say, what do you want me to do today? And they can tell you. You don't need an attorney. And they just took money at hand over fist from her. She spent a little over $13,000 on attorneys. And she finally fired the guy because he just wouldn't do nothing. His name was Stan Whiting in Winter. He just wouldn't do nothing.
We don't want to get into the name of the attorney, who he is or what he is, but she fired her attorney, whoever he was.
Right. So then, even though South Dakota Supreme Court has clearly said, it's in a case named Bruce, B-R-U-C-H, v. South Dakota, he did the same thing. Only she fired her attorney about 2 weeks before trial, and then she asked for a continuance. They refused to give her, just so she'd go get another attorney, go to Rapid City and find a decent attorney. And I told her, you know, not to worry about presenting witnesses or anything like that. It was on December 4th. I said, look, don't worry about any of that, because you go in there, they're going to have to give you a continuance. So, you know, why waste all that time and money preparing all that? Because there's no way they can make you go to trial without an attorney. So she went in there December 4th, and the judge made her go to trial without an attorney. And there's a South Dakota case. It's clearly the same thing happened. The Supreme Court reversed it. The South Dakota Supreme Court reversed it in 97 over the exact same thing.
And, of course, her daughter is still now in the custodial care. How old is her daughter getting to be?
She's 9 now.
And where is she staying?
Well, they won't tell her. She's somewhere north of Winter, South Dakota. They allow Carla to see her once, 1 hour, one day a week, and it has to be supervised by some guy that smokes cigarettes and acts like an idiot.
Well, no, then she must know where the girl is.
No, they won't tell her.
Oh, they bring the girl down for the meeting?
Correct. They go to the city hall, or where the courthouse is in Kennebec, South Dakota, I believe it is. And she gets to see Jessica for 1 hour on Thursday. That was like today. She was up there.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment here with Bob Fletcher. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is a frustrating story and a disheartening story of a mother who's just... thought she could play the system, and of course the system has destroyed her. So where do they stand now? Is this case now is back before the Supreme Court?
Correct. That day of the adjudication hearing, Carla could have had the daughter subpoenaed and everything, which she did, but I said, we don't need to take these witnesses up there. She had several. But I'm the one that really, I guess, messed up, because knowing the law, I knew they couldn't have a trial. And so I told her, well, don't do all that. It's a waste of time and money.
No.
And they forced her to trial. So the judge just found against her, and they had no case at all. And on the whole, you know, it doesn't take a lot of thinking. You just got to realize that Carla talked to the daughter. So their whole case for abandonment rests on the daughter's testimony. Well, they didn't subpoena the daughter. They just had Lonnie Dunn come. And so the judge asked him what his daughter said, which, of course, is any half-wit that's watched television would know is hearsay testimony, inadmissible in court.
Well, it may very well be, Bob, but it doesn't matter
court
accepts. And the thing is that it sounds to me like this whole thing has just been lost because they didn't try to defend it. You know, they should have had her daughter there. They should have insisted on all the people. They should have had the Lonnie's daughter there. And because they didn't do that, you lost the case. That's what it's all about.
Well, actually, Jessica, Carla's daughter, was subpoenaed, duly subpoenaed, properly subpoenaed and properly served. We had the paperwork, and she was not there. They just didn't bring her. Right?
Now, if that would have been me, there would have been a warrant for my arrest. But the state did not present Jessica.
Well, then why didn't she, of course, pursue that and demand that they do that? That would make the hearings invalid if somebody is supposed to be there and they're not there.
Only if the law applied to them, which it does not. You're right. Furthermore, the reason she didn't have Lonnie, we did not have Lonnie's daughter there and several other people, Carla's not at all short on people willing to testify that she's never abused that child in any way, shape, or form. I guess what I left out is, after they'd had Jessica for about 3 months, they had her going to this psychiatrist, and it was probably Thomas Jefferson that said, anybody who sees a psychiatrist needs your head examined. Good point. But all of a sudden, after about 3 months with this psychiatrist, Jessica is telling her that she, at first it was that Carla beat her up every once in a while. And then it was Carla beat her every day. And then it was Carla beat her every day and made her beg for food. Right? Which is absolutely absurd. And so we shot back at him and subpoenaed the shrink for depositions. And they also, in the midst of this, told Jessica that Carla was mentally ill and that she's a psycho and all this nonsense with no evidence whatsoever. And so we shot back at them with depositions for their shrink and all these other people that are involved in this. Well, they just didn't show. And in South Dakota, a judge does not have to grant a subpoena. In South Dakota, you can just fill a subpoena out, and these people are bound. And more than that, if they don't voluntarily accept service, they get charged for it. But they just didn't show. And she told Carla that she was not going to honor the subpoena. Well, that's a bunch of nonsense.
It doesn't matter.
She's be in jail.
She's the judge, and when you've got a corrupt system, Bob, why are you surprised?
I guess I am somewhat surprised because I thought that you could only go so far and you were going to get shut down. And this judge, she don't care. She just does whatever she wants to do, and they just railroad Carla. And now, after they, it's just amazing. Her finding of fact says, well, that Carla didn't make arrangements to leave Jessica. Which the only way she knows that is because Lonnie Dunn said so. Well, Carla never said she made arrangements with Lonnie Dunn. Sure, story was she made arrangements with Lonnie Dunn's daughter, which is
but,
true.
But that is a stupid thing on her part to talk to a girl. How old is the daughter?
40, 39.
40, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on, she ought to. And I think, I feel certain, the reason they didn't subpoena her, she lives with her dad, right? Why didn't they just subpoena her? They subpoenaed Lonnie. I'll tell you why they didn't subpoena her, because she would have told the truth. Their whole case would have been out the window. But yet this judge finds that Carla temporarily abandoned Jessica because she did not make arrangements. So, to begin with, if you look up the definition of abandonment, especially the legal definition of abandonment, you have to permanently abandon rights.
Well, but be that as it may, she certainly should have talked to Lonnie, or she should have said, asked Jessica to look after her.
She did. Well, her big mistake was not just walking in there with Jessica and finding Lonnie.
But
that
she didn't.
I mean,
see, this is the thing that she's trying to blame it on everybody else, and she made a terrible mistake. Now, that is certainly no justification for taking the child away from her, but she's
right.
trying to blame everybody else for her stupidity.
Well, yeah, poor judgment. But say what about if this is their definition of abandonment, then what about when the kid's at the babysitter and you're supposed to be there at 5 o'clock and you get off of work at 4 today, so you go home and fall asleep or go down to the bar and have a couple of beers or something, and at 10 o'clock it rolls around and you either wake up or, you know, you're having fun. So, well, I'll just leave, you know, I'll go get her at midnight. Well, that's the same thing that Carla did, right? Because you don't have any prior arrangements with the babysitter. What's the difference?
I think what you've described is an abandonment. I think it's a total lack of. I mean, if you do something like that and you're out drinking beers and you just leave your child and have no idea where they are, you're acting very irresponsibly.
Irresponsible is one thing. Abandoning your child is a totally different thing. And what Carla did was simply she knew these people well. She thought she could trust the guy.
and why he did. Look, I called him and said, why did you do that? And they couldn't explain it to me.
Well, maybe, you know, maybe they're friends of the people that she sued.
Actually, that's true. That's true. And in court, he admitted that he had just got off the phone with that guy.
All right, fine. So basically, this is payback for what she did, which was unconscionable in my estimation. What is a Christian doing suing her employer because they can't keep her on when she's pregnant?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I wasn't for that myself because I don't think that when you hire somebody, you take them to raise. I think you ought to be able to hire and fire at will.
Right. Well, anyway, she's got a tragic situation. Her case is in the Supreme Court. But this is simply another example of what happens when, of course, there's a vested financial interest in taking children from parents.
Well, it's just a runaway train. It just defies logic what they've done to her.
Right.
Here's the thing is, you can like Carla, you can dislike Carla, you can approve or disapprove what she did. But if they can do this to Carla, they can do it to you.
But they can do it to anybody. And they do it all the time, all across this country. Within this last week, somebody called me, wanted to come over and talk to me to tell me a similar story going right on here in the Monterey Bay area. And I said, look, there's nothing I can do about it. We have a corrupt child abuse system. And, I feel very sorry for you. But you're only interested now that it's your ox that's gored. You really don't care. They've been taking children away from the parents for 20 years.
About 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And this thing's been going on. And this tragedy is, Bob, that so many of the people out there really don't care until their ox gets gored. I bet Carla could care less about any of these things.
No, she had no idea that. Before this, she basically had no idea that everything the government said wasn't the gospel.
And, I think it'd be very well that there was collusion on the other side, to get back at her. I mean, these people probably had to put out that $10,000 on their own. That probably hurt them very badly. Was she concerned about that?
No, it's a major corporation. I mean, to them, that wasn't a lot of money, no. But either way, I can see where they're ticked off about it. And I suppose I would be too. I guess the question arises there is, would the thing to do be go after Carla or to get these ridiculous socialist laws changed? You know, it seems to me like their money would have been a lot better spent going after the congressman that passed that stupid, ridiculous law.
But their money was gone. She had their $10,000, and she wasn't concerned about that. And I'm not justifying it. It's just like a terrible, terrible tragedy. But, this is what goes on so often in our society. I've never been sued anybody in court, specifically because, I feel that it demeans me if I get involved in lawsuits. Lots of times I've thought of it when people have taken advantage and been mean and nasty, but I've never done it. Well, I hope Carla has learned a good lesson out of this. Do you think that she's going to get their daughter back again?
I don't have any question that she'll get her back because they have no case whatsoever against Carla.
Well, but what's the Supreme Court going to do? Is she going to be able to get a hearing in the Supreme Court?
I think so. Just strictly on the Bruce case, which the Supreme Court just ruled in 1997, that you have a right to an attorney, and if you fire that attorney the morning of trial, that's too bad. You still have a right to attorney, and that's what they did in that Bruce case, is the guy fired his attorney the night before, and the judge said, hey, I got a bunch of jurors here, you're going to trial, you like it or not. That was on a DUI, which is not half as serious as this, or a tenth as serious. And the Supreme Court reversed that, and they said, hey, she has a right to it. And also the Sixth Amendment also.
But of course, even then, she's still got to go back all the way through the whole court system. So they said,
I don't think they'll go through it again, because we've got them on record now. If it was reversed, I would imagine they will just give up. I can't feature them trying to bring this back when we've got them on record. And this time, I'm not dumb enough to say, well, that judge will have to follow the law, so don't call them witnesses, Carla. And so if another trial, I would not be concerned at all about that.
Has anybody talked to Lonnie's daughter to get her what she would say in court?
No, that's something. That's why Carla, this lawyer that she paid all this money to, he never, ever took one single deposition these months.
Why doesn't Carla talk to her and find out what she would say in court?
Because he told her that she couldn't do that because that would be called by the court, coercion of witnesses, which is bunk. She has a right to talk to that witness. I mean, you know, unless she was actually threatening her, they could never do that. And I told Carla that.
Why doesn't she get a friend to talk to this woman to find out what her testimony would be?
Her reply, every time I said that, her reply would be this. That's what Stan's supposed to do. Stan's supposed to take care of that. I said, Carla, I don't like the guy to begin with, and secondly, I wouldn't trust him to tie my shoe. And she finally did fire the guy when she realized that he'd sold her down the river. She did finally fire him. But by then, she paid him thousands and thousands of dollars. And then we get this file that's 4 inches thick that is nothing but 5 copies of everything. He never filed a motion for discovery. He never took one single deposition. He never made one single phone call. Carla's got a dozen witnesses, these upstanding people that are willing to say that she was a good parent, Jessica was a good child. And then we've also found out that, you know, Jessica, they said Jessica had been in 12 schools since she was like first grade or something like that, which is physically impossible if you think about it. She's only 8 years old. And all this other stuff, which that now they've reversed course on that. They didn't present any of that. They've just abandoned all that. But we had the paperwork because after she fired that attorney and then the next attorney, who also never did file a motion for discovery, when she fired him, then I said, file a motion for discovery, and you can't believe the avalanche of papers they turned loose. And it's all there. So we go from they were going to commit Carla because she was a danger, which that just came out of the blue. The judge is the one that thought of that. Neither attorney saying it, but the judge said that. Made a motion, because the court, on its own motion, can do this stuff in South Dakota. You know, there's two prosecutors, and then your attorney is an enemy spy, is what kind of what goes on in there. And so then they went from, okay, first it was about Jessica. Then they were going to commit Carla to protect the baby, which is absurd. It was like 3-4 months before this baby was even born. And then we filed this motion to subpoena this shrink to find out who's putting these ridiculous stuff in Jessica's mind. Well, then it all just reversed course. There's no more accusations, none whatsoever, of any type of abuse at all. Nothing.
Well, now, of course, when your Carla sees her daughter, do they get along? Is there a good relationship between them?
Yeah, real good, yeah. But like one time, Carla came back all upset, and she said, well, this Jason, he's this caseworker, who tells Carla every time he lies to her, it's always his supervisor, which is a lie. But anyway, he had went outside to smoke a cigarette. What a fine example for a child. And she said, I told her, you know, well, as soon as he leaves out, just, you know, find out, you know, get information from her. Well, she told Jessica, she said, ask her a question. I don't know what that question was. Jessica's answer was, I can't talk to you when Jason's not here. They've brainwashed this poor little girl. Then later on, Jessica was real upset one day. This is probably 2 months ago. Carla went in there and Jessica was real upset. And she said, you know, what's going on? Jessica said, why did you tell them I haven't went to 11 schools? And Carla said, well, because that's the truth. You haven't went to 11 schools. Well, you weren't supposed to tell them that.
She went. You just said a minute ago, they said it was ridiculous that she'd gone to 12 schools and she's gone to 11 schools?
No. See, that's what they said in their in the paperwork we got, that Jessica went to 12 schools or something like that.
I mean, Carla asked Jessica why she told him that.
Right, and Jessica was all upset when Carla went to visit her. And so Carla says, well, what's wrong? Jessica says, well, why did you tell him I didn't go to 12 schools, or 11, whatever it was? And Carla said, because you didn't. That's the truth. You've only been to 2.
And so what did Jessica say?
Well, you weren't supposed to tell him that. So evidently, she's told them that stuff. I mean, if it's not true, where does she come up with it and why?
Well, of course, maybe the psychiatrist is playing games with their minds. We have this great book on Operation Bluebird, where they hired psychiatrists to create mental disease in children. As absurd as that may sound, If any of our listeners have not read Bluebird by Dr. Colin Ross, based upon 15,000 pages of CIA testimony, it's a good read. In fact, we did 2 hours this afternoon with Jane Whiting, who certainly has worked with many of the Bluebird survivors. And children, they would actually, psychiatrists would get them, and then they would try to implant these false ideas in them or try to disturb their mind and create dissociated personality. So Jessica honestly believes that she's been to 12 schools?
I'm not sure. I don't think she does. She's a very smart little girl, and she loves the Lord, and she knows she's not supposed to lie. She knows that Jesus is not going to approve of her lying. And right before this happened, the last time I ever seen her, I talked to her about why she was being bad. And she said, she told me that, well, you know, sometimes Satan makes me do things. And I said, well, but you know that you can't do what Satan tells you to do. We were sitting at Taco John's in winter, and Carl was in the hospital. And she said, well, I know that. And I know that Jesus is there helping me, and all I got to do is that. And she's a very smart little girl. And she knows she's not supposed to lie. She knows that. And I don't know why she told him that, but I do know this. She can't think of that stuff on her own. Somebody's had to put that in her head.
No, maybe they have, but you never know what is happening when they are in government custody. And, of course, the trouble is that once the government gets hold of them, they can do whatever they want to. And if, you know, most social workers are good, most psychiatrists are good, but there are those out there who have actually been paid by the CIA to create mental illness and to experiment on children's minds. And that, of course, was the television program The Pretender was all about. And as Jane Whiting said, and as Dr. Colin Ross said in his book, they've run into lots of children who have been victims of these various experimental programs to see how they could distort reality and plant false ideas. So who knows what's going on? And I would be very, very concerned. Well, I just hoping that they can, you know, get Jessica back to her mother. But it sounds like her mother is her own worst enemy.
Oh, I would agree with that, Dr. Stan. But if you read their thing about they knew Jessica went to a Christian school, okay? They knew that. And they say that. In one paragraph, they say that. The next paragraph is, two paragraphs, well, we called the public school, and they had never talked to her, and they didn't know who she was, and we don't believe this mother that's got this child is in school like the law says. Now, wait a minute. They give the names of who they talked to at the public school and exactly what they said. Why are they talking to the public school when they knew she didn't go to public school?
Because it may be they're anti-Christian, and there are people who really hate Christianity and everything Christianity stands for.
And most of those people are in the court system.
or they're working in social work. Now, well, there's some wonderful people there, but there are some wicked and evil people. And the trouble is that, once again, the church does nothing at all about it.
Yeah, well, the problem with the social people, these social services wackos, is that 99.9% of them are giving the other 0.1% a bad name. I've never met one yet that didn't. Here's the thing. They know what's best for you, and they know what's best for your job.
Well, they've learned that in college, and of course, where they've been educated far beyond their intelligence. But then I shouldn't complain. I was one of those people, too, when I first came out of college. So, unfortunately,
well, and Dr. Stan, I think I was, too, in school. I look back when I was in school in a little town in Ainsworth, Nebraska, and I see things that I, at the time, didn't question. But my grandfather was a major constitutionalist. He read the Constitution, understood it, and he fought for property rights. And about that time in the 70s, they were trying to take your guns. Well, they still are, but they were starting to make progress after 1968. And so I got involved in the Constitution strictly because of guns and property. And then, you know, sooner or later, your eyes start to open up. Then along about 1990, I somehow come on to you somewhere. and people like John Loeffler and Dennis Cuddy and Joel Skousen, and we have a pretty good one that we can actually get on the radio here, Gary Brownfield.
Oh, sure, right. He does
a
good job.
He, you know, and he's trying to educate people as to what you're supposed to be doing, but it's not working.
Well, all we can do is keep trying, and I know Adairi's doing a good job of reaching a lot of people there in the Midwest, an area we don't have a lot of. Do they have a local radio station there that might be interested in carrying some
Winter
of our
South
programs?
Winter, South Dakota would, if there's only one that would in this whole country, that would be Winter, South Dakota. There's a country station in Winter. They're kind of a down-home station. The rest of these stations here, they're not going to give you any information on the government kidnapping your children, but they'll sure tell you what the local ball team did.
Well, why don't you talk to the local station and see if they'd be interested in pulling. We get programs, our afternoon program, which is, I guess, you're what, Central Time?
Mm-hmm.
5 to 7 is up on satellite and available to anybody who pull it down, and they get about 7 minutes of advertising time. So, and if you're out there in the listening audience, and go to your local station and ask them if they will consider taking our programs, or they're free, and of course they get 7 minutes of advertising time, and if we can get people listening, we can get them thinking. And I'll tell you that the areas where we are heard on a regular basis, we have a really dedicated listening audience. Now, do you listen to us up there on shortwave or internet, or how do you get it?
No, I listen to pretty much everything you do on the internet, and then I get your tapes, but I usually just try to give them away because I've already heard it anyway. And then I get Loeffler and I listen to Brownfield. You know, I'm not too impressed with the nightly news, including Fox News. Anybody that thinks Fox News is conservative, you know, it's nuts. It's about center, maybe.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And they're not going to tell you, you know, on Fox News that your children are in danger. I mean, that's just the last thing they do.
Well, what would you expect, though? Fox is owned by Rupert the Red Murdoch, and he was known as Rupert the Red when he was in college, and nothing really has changed much since then. He's an elitist.
No, and why don't they tell people that him and his son have all bought, are in bed with the Chinese, and that they've bought all those rights over there in China to bring satellite television into China?
Well,
nobody seems to know that, but it's in the news.
Sure. Well, the average individual is so busy being busy, he doesn't have time to be worried about a lot of the things we're talking about tonight. And, you know, I feel so sorry for Carla and their daughter, and they're just caught up in a system, and, you know, she's doesn't understand the system. She's tried to play the system.
Right.
And suddenly, you know, I hope she's grown up a lot. And
oh,
she's matured,
you could
and understood what she's, what's really going on. At least maybe she'll help you there to reach some of the other people.
Well, now, right now she's reading Bev Ekman's book.
Which is that, The Cloning of the American Mind?
Yeah, and she's astounded, and she, every 5 minutes, she walks up and says, "Can you believe this? Can you believe this, what's going on?" I said, well, yeah, I can believe it. I already know that. You know, and she's astounded. Yeah, she just really what Carla was, but she believed in the government.
Well,
she believed the government could help her.
Maybe Bob and
that was
final analysis, maybe this will change Carla's life. And just as my life was changed when I became aware of what was going on, and I know a lot of people whose lives were changed when they suddenly began to understand what this is all about. So all we can really do is sort of hope for her sake that maybe something good will come out of this. I just hope that she can get Jessica back, and you know, because that little girl needs her mother.
Well, the damage is done. The little girl has no stability. And any time she gets mad at Carla, from now, say Carla gets her back tomorrow, well, all she's got to do, if she gets mad at Carla, she can just call the government, right? Or she, you know, if Carla won't let her go downtown, well, all she's got to do is just call the government.
Well, I'll tell you what, then they take her away again, and of course, I'm sure she's not as happy with the foster parent as she would be with her own mother.
You know, they won't allow Carla to see her, which is outrageous. South Dakota says they have to give reasonable visitation, which, you know, 1 hour a week is not reasonable. I don't care who you are. They won't let Carla see her. I'm not even sure the little girl remembers Carla. I haven't seen. The next thing is I wanted to see her, and they come up with this, that I couldn't see Jessica because I didn't have a criminal background check. There is absolutely nothing in South Dakota law that says that, absolutely nothing.
But you have to understand that these are people with power, and power corrupts absolutely
right.
Everyone.
That's what it's all about. It's about power, ego, and authority. And they don't care about Jessica, and they don't care about Carla. What they care about is, I know what's best for you, and I'm going to tell you what to do, and if you question it, I'm going to have to show you where the authority is. And you're going to do what I tell you to do, because I know what's best for you.
Well, Bob, we got real problems, and I just wish you could get the people in your church to understand it. Maybe try to get them to listen to some of those tapes. Don't give the tapes away. Lend them. That way they have an obligation to listen to them. If you give them, they don't have to listen to it. If you lend it, they...
Yeah, actually, I do usually lend them, yeah. I always get them back.
Okay, fine. And then
our church has been very, extremely supportive of Carla.
Good.
Very supportive. She hit them with a deluge of letters telling them what a wonderful mother... Because, see, the only people that claim she's not a good mother are the government. More than that, one of the lady that babysitted Jessica here is the domestic violence woman. And she wrote a letter all but calling them criminals. And you know, but Carla hit them with a deluge of letters. Everybody supported her and done, you know, letter after letter. And did it make any difference? No.
Well, you know, give her our best, and I just hope that you can help her. But you're going to have to, you know... Can't quote the law to them because they don't abide by the law.
No, the law does not apply to them.
You've got to get the witnesses there, and you've got to go in fully armed, and you're going to have to go with her, I think, and just make sure this thing is done.
They will not allow me in the courtroom.
They won't, huh?
No.
Why not?
It's it is a closed hearing, and only the people that the judge allows in can come in.
Well, of course, once again, we see that it's a separate court system, and of course, you can understand why. $25,000 is a lot of money.
Right.
Anyway, God bless you, Bob, and I give our best to Carl, and I keep us appraised as to what's going on. It's really just one of so many tragic, tragic stories we hear.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. I appreciate it.
God bless you.
God bless you too, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. And, of course, pray. It's a... You know, it's such a frustrating story, and yet, of course, through human tragedy, pray for America and pray for our boys going to battle. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Well, how old was this storm?
Yeah, I've gone through that.